at a business and what you could do to prevent it. Now, on the positive side, I don't know of anyone locally that personally was affected by it, but I would imagine that the people who actually had decent protections in place would not have gotten whacked by this ransomware. Of more concern is when you don't have the right parts and pieces in place, or the currently still unpatched Intel AMT vulnerability, which is basically affecting hundreds of millions of computers around the world. So let's get started with the topic. The WannaCry ransomware, I know that you've probably heard so much about it, and people were talking about, oh, what does it do, and these sorts of things, but very, very few organizations other than the security technology companies were actually talking about what it is that you needed to have in place in order to mitigate the risk of being affected by this. And pretty much every organization that I looked at, certainly every little news article and stuff on this, it never went into enough tangible detail to really be of much use to anybody as far as I was concerned. I mean, it was really tons of stuff left up to interpretation. So say, for example, it would say in your perimeter security appliance, you needed to have, APT blocking and, AV scanning and blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, these sorts of things. Well, it's like, if you didn't already know what all of those things were, what good does that do you, right? How do you go and assess the existing solution that you have against what it is that you need to have? So fortunately for all of you, I've written several rather lengthy topics, articles on this particular topic over the years. They're all available on my website, which is qualityplusconsulting.com. There is an article out there that talks about the computers and security self-assessment, which is really, it does exactly that. It allows you to sit down and evaluate what you have versus what you need to have. And if you can't tick the box that says, yes, I have this, and yes, I have that, and yes, I have this other thing, then you really need to be looking at a different solution. And in many cases, that's going to mean a different provider. I was recently out at an international security conference in Seattle at the beginning of May. And it was an interesting experience because I've had multiple experiences over the last 2 years where being at a security conference, I am just in some cases anywhere from completely shocked and dumbfounded by the lack of security savvy that some of these folks have, to the point where anywhere from that to just what I consider to be them using the wrong decision-making process. So what I mean by that is, they'll go and they'll make an assessment, say, hey, you know, we're going to use Webroot for all of our client computer systems because it's really, you know, easy for us to manage. Well, and they say, well, and it doesn't have any false positives. Okay, but is it an effective product? Well, the answer is no. And this isn't just me saying this. The latest Gartner and Forrester reports on the global security products for endpoint protection. Now, what is an endpoint? An endpoint is your servers, your laptops, your iPads, your phones, your desktop computers. Okay, that is an endpoint. Again, Gartner and Forrester just came out in the last couple of months here with their latest and greatest analysis of, and they analyzed like the top 20 products. And the Webroot product is not in the top quadrant. So, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter how easy it is to manage, and it doesn't matter what the cost is. What matters is whether or not it's effective. I mean, we could look at the last 10 years of perimeter security appliance reports as well from, you know, large industry standard analysis companies. And like NSS Labs, again, Gartner, Forrester, these sorts of companies that do these very objective analyses, and they're literally doing bench tests, and they're trying to push viruses, and they're trying to push malware and ransomware and things like that through these appliances, and finding out, does the appliance catch it, stop it, what and how fast is it, how does it affect performance, these sorts of things. What you consistently see over the last 10 years is that there are only two perimeter security appliances in the marketplace worldwide, only two, that are even remotely contenders, because those are the only two brands that offer products that meet the 98% or better effective metric. So again, what does it matter how much the thing costs if it doesn't meet the primary objective of being effective enough? And when we're talking about security here, there is no one solution that is by itself 100% effective 100% of the time. I mean, that is just not even humanly possible. It's not mechanically or machine learning possible at this point. And it probably never will be. But what we can get to is 98% effectiveness with one component of a solution. And then we can have another component of a solution that's also 98% effective. And what you ultimately end up there is a matrix, a crossover between the two that says, basically, the bad doo-doo just is not getting through. And I can tell you, I've personally experienced this an abundance of times over the years where one component or another component of my security solution stops the bad doo-doo. And it is so crucial that you have all these parts and pieces. I saw this huge shift in 2016 where all these organizations that didn't have perimeter security appliances before, they got slapped with some nasty thing or another, and then they're like, oh, we got to have security. So then they finally decided to get some security. But what was really shocking in 2016 was that no longer was the residential market able to get by without a perimeter security appliance. Now, there are people that just really don't browse the internet from home. And I know some folks like that. They're just really not heavy internet browsers. So if you're not really a heavy internet browser, if the thing that you're doing at home is, your taxes and paying bills online, okay, you're not then going to websites that could potentially be infected with malvertising and, other malicious stuff. I mean, for example, have we ever seen the We Energies website deliver malware? No. I've been looking at the We Energies website for at least 16 years, and I can tell you that it's never delivered malware. So, kudos to We Energies. So, if you're going to We Energies website, and that's basically where you go, or you go into the American Express website, their website has never been delivering malware. And I've never seen Time Warner Cable, now Spectrum's website, hosting malware. So that doesn't mean that all bill pay is safe. What it comes down to is a risk profile. And what I saw really prevalently throughout all of 2016 was residential users who were, really folks that didn't do anything dangerous, but they did just browse the internet. They would look at a lot of news and pop onto a lot of different websites, and they'd do things like research on their favorite topics, and they would end up getting into trouble. And the variances of trouble was, the degrees of trouble certainly were different, but ultimately what it came down to was it, and I could give you like 10 different examples. I mean, it was really just a lot of instances of this, which is a huge variance from all the prior years where people were able to be in a residential situation and just basically get away with not having a perimeter security appliance. But in all these circumstances, the solution to the problem was the same solution that I've been delivering in the business world for two decades, which is the defense in depth, the cybersecurity kill chain. And all of this is directly tiable to the whole WannaCry ransomware and even the Intel AMT vulnerability. So the name of the game that you got to realize there's two big pieces of this that you have to have, and maybe three that you really have to have. But and it's really not that hard. There are components of this though that are not inexpensive. They're not unobtainium, but they're not like $40 a year. There are some components of this that are only $40 a year. So if you want to just keep your computer systems working, and that's really what we're talking about here. We're not talking about, oh, do you have data on your computer that you want to protect from being compromised? Now, I know some folks that will say that they don't have anything on their computer that they care about, and I don't really frankly believe them because I'm pretty sure that they've logged on to some website or something, and there's some sort of personal data on their computer that, if it was compromised, it would adversely impact them. I'm not saying it would destroy their lives, but it certainly would adversely impact them to a financial degree that is more significant than simply the expense of mitigating the risk. And that's the way that you have to think about this. So the name of the game is you first have to stop all of this internet-born garbage that before it ever gets to your endpoints. This really starts looking more and more and more cost-effective when you're talking about you have a home and you have multiple people in that home, or you have multiple people with multiple devices. So I'm not saying that it doesn't make sense for a single individual person, because I work with a lot of people that are just single individual people in their home, but they have a printer and it's network attached, and they maybe have a little tablet and a laptop and a phone, and they want to be able to have secure wireless throughout their house and just to be able to use the internet without being afraid of it. So that's a huge paradigm shift too. I mean, a lot of people now that I talk to are they're like, well, I'm concerned. I don't want to go to these various websites because I could be getting bad doo-doo on my computer. Yeah, that's true. You could if you don't have the right protection pieces in place. But if you get a properly programmed perimeter security appliance, which, as I said, it's not trivial to do so. It really requires a great deal of skill to correctly implement a perimeter security appliance. I would argue there's probably less than 500 people nationwide that actually have the skill to do that. That's not a lot of people. So first you have to find one of those people. I happen to be one of them. And then you get that device put in place, and then you get it maintained. All right, your next piece is of the puzzle is very inexpensive, but you've got to move up to a solution that again is something where somebody is helping you maintain those settings, unless you just happen to be a security expert yourself. And this leads into the endpoint protection piece, right? I was telling you about how Forrester and Gartner recently evaluated 20 plus different endpoint security products. And it's very interesting because both Gartner and Forrester pretty much came to the same conclusions. Not difficult to understand why, because as I said, when you're looking at an endpoint security product or an endpoint protection product, it has to actually be effective, right? So if it's only 75% effective, what good is that at all? I mean, it doesn't matter if you got that for free. It's only 75% effective. So when we look at endpoint protection products, none of them are exorbitantly expensive. Not a single one of them is exorbitantly expensive. In fact, I would argue that even in a residential situation, on a per endpoint basis, you're probably not going to pay more than $45 per year per endpoint in order to have proper endpoint protection and to actually have someone who's appropriately certified and skilled to manage and in an ongoing basis manage the security settings for that product. And that's really crucial. Now, let me explain why. So we have all of these cloud-based technologies where effectively the server component of the security solution that your endpoint talks to, where it gets settings and it gets new content and things like that. This server component is hosted in the cloud. And because of this has enabled the security vendors to be able to consistently release new feature sets. So this is actually pretty darn slick. This really has met an enormous need in the marketplace, such as, new types of ransomware or new types of advanced persistent threats exist. The security vendors can create this new functionality in their software and embed it into the cloud server. And then all that we, as the security architects who manage these solutions, have to do is, number one, we have to be plugged into the information in order to find out when those new settings become available. But then we have to read up on it, learn it, test it, experience it ourselves, and then decide when and how it is appropriate to roll that out to clients. But imagine if what you were doing was going and simply buying that software. Now, first off, there is no piece of software for security that when you buy it, it is configured completely. It doesn't exist. There is no piece of software for security that you will ever buy that is actually correctly, completely configured when you first install it. So what I'm telling you is it actually has to be configured if you expect it to secure your system properly. All right, so the question is, are you that person who has the skill to manage those security settings? If you are, fantastic. But if you're not, get some help. But then here's the other piece to it. Having somebody come to your house and configure it the one time because you used a residential endpoint protection product is a complete waste of money from my perspective. And I'm telling you with more than 2 decades of security expertise. What's much better is to get a business class product put on your endpoints that then is attached to the cloud server, where then your security solution provider can manage those settings on your behalf. And then when they decide after their own testing and such that those settings can be implemented, that those settings just magically come down to your endpoint. And to give you an example, Trend Micro in the beginning of roughly the beginning of April, or might have even been like mid-March or so, came out with some new functionality as part of their worry-free business class, worry-free services product. And, I was all over that right away because, of course, what do I want? I want the best protection. So I'm going to implement that for my own systems and live with it for a couple of weeks and make sure that it's okay and make sure that I like how it's behaving and understanding what the implications of that is. And then I'm just going to roll it out to clients. So if I don't think it's something that they need to be bothered with in terms of an email notification that says, hey, I'm going to roll out the new settings, blah, blah, whatever. If I don't think that it has any impact on them, I'm just going to roll out the security settings. But if I wasn't there to roll out those security settings, then all of those endpoints would not be making use of the newly available security, enhanced security functionality that's part of the product that you paid for. So this is so crucial that you have someone actually managing your security solution for you. And you have to be extremely careful about what company or what person you're using to do that. Because there's a lot of people that talk a good game and they really don't have anything to back it up. So, with regards to the results of the Gartner and Forrester reports, they both came to the same conclusion that, yet again, for something like the 10th year in a row, the Trend Micro business class products are the top of the heap. They are the top of the pack, followed by Sophos, Kaspersky, and Symantec in that order. So, if what you're looking for is a product that is the most effective, and you're only going to pay about $45 a year for it, well, gee, why would you buy anything less? I don't know. You know, I mean, $45 a year per endpoint is not a lot of money to be talking about when you're considering the alternative, which is your computer, your data, your stuff in general has been compromised. So, the bottom line of what you need in order to mitigate all these risks is frankly the same thing that you've needed that I've been talking about for years and years on this show. It's all the same stuff, but it is a paradigm where you have to partner with a security solution provider. Because if you're not that security expert, how are you supposed to keep on top of all of that? You know, it's like any other specialized industry. So I found this really sweet article that talked about what do hackers actually do with your data, and I thought this was quite relevant in this whole, you know, ransomware discussion, because you know a lot of people have asked me, well, why do the bad guys, you know, care about having my data, and what are they going to do with it? Well, this is an article that comes out of the Secplicity blog. It was by an anonymous contributor, but it was still pretty decent, and they are revealing that the hackers inventory the stolen data and then they basically package up the personal information and sell it. And they look for interesting things that are probably going to be potentially lucrative accounts, such as government and military addresses, company email addresses, especially email addresses and password combinations that are associated with domains at large corporations. And you know, corporate accounts in general. Now, I'm not, you know, I don't want you to interpret that to think that the small to medium businesses are not at risk. There are plenty of other reports that are actually talking about how SMBs are the most attractive to hackers. They are the most significantly targeted organizations by hackers. Because hackers know that most SMBs have inadequate security. I mean, you know, compare that to Caterpillar, all right? You know, Caterpillar has probably, I'm just, you know, guessing a number, but they've probably got 400 IT staff. So do you think that they have enough people working on security of their systems? Yeah, probably they do, you know? I think it would be much harder to hack Caterpillar than a home remodeler in Wisconsin, right? So don't think that the hackers aren't going after the low-hanging, easy-to-obtain fruit like small to medium business and residential stuff because they absolutely are. So then the hackers take the credit card information that they have. And they offload that information and they basically package it and sell it in bundles to other hackers that then use that information to, you know, commit financial crimes, basically. And then over a period of months, the hackers bundle up authentication credentials and sell them in bulk. And this is like the last piece that they do. Because those credentials oftentimes are going to have been changed. But this is exactly why you should use a unique password for every website. And if your internet-facing credentials are not yet utilizing multi-factor authentication, then you need to seriously look at turning on multi-factor authentication. A good example of this, would be your LinkedIn credentials. Or Office 365, or you know, your Google Mail, things like that. All of those systems have multi-factor authentication systems that are very, very mature They're robust and easy to use. I mean, I know scores and scores and scores of people who are using this multi-factor authentication technology and being very, very successful with it, despite having an extremely wide variance of technical skill. So that means that the system works for the people that are highly technical and the people that are not very technical. And then I ran into this article I thought was just really scary as all get out, so I thought I would share it with you as well, which was about an audio editing breakthrough technology that allows audio recordings to be edited like text to insert words that you've never said. Now, historically, this sort of process of taking all the recordings of somebody's voice that they have done, over a period of years and whatever, and then chopping those up to get individual words with an individual, tempo and a timbre, like, is it going up at the end of a question? Or is it going down because it's a statement? It's that combination of stuff that used to be an extremely labor-intensive process. I mean, obviously, people who thought that it was worth the investment of time have known how to do this for a very long time. But now, technology is coming out that is enabling this to be so easily done in terms of literally find and replace with searching. So I'm not even going to say, I'm not even going to tell you where to go look this up because it's like so evil the technology is. But just understand that this is very, very, very Orwellian type of stuff where, we've all heard, whether it be in recent history or past history, of individuals being targeted and set up, especially by nation states, that, especially in, oh, let's say East Germany or communist Russia or, in the communist Chinese areas, where someone is effectively targeted and slandered and said, oh, well, you said this and you said that, and here's the proof. Well, the proof that they did these things has all been manufactured by their adversaries. So if this software becomes readily available, it's now going to be very easy to just use the software to manufacture somebody actually saying something that they never did. And the implications of this are staggering. And so I wanted to bring it to all of your attention so that you could be aware of this, so that you could engage those critical thinking skills that you have. And really, as you're listening to people say things, as you're listening to these, audio recordings of people say things, you really have to start asking, does that really sound like something that that person would say? Does that pass the smell test with everything else they've ever said? Now, I mean, granted, I'll tell you, there are some people that are just not consistent at all, but there's others of us that are rock solid consistent. So we all need to engage our critical thinking skills a little bit more about that because this sort of technology exists now. And it most likely will be used inappropriately. Well, that's it for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show and have a fantastic weekend.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
Support for WGTD comes from Kenosha Harbor Market. Looking for some down-home southern comfort food? Visit Dildot's Catering for chicken, ribs, wings, and more. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Neway. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters.